We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Harvey, let's duck, duck, go.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Glad that you are hanging out here with me. I've known Evan Moore for a long time, man, and this guy loves hockey, which, when you know his background, seems a little bit strange, because you wouldn't ordinarily find huge hockey fans where he grew up in
Let's
Chicago.
Do that hockey.
Yes, Laszlo, my cousin Laszlo Holmes. Let's do that hockey. But he has a book that I think is more relevant now than ever. Game Misconduct, Hockey's Toxic Culture, and How to Fix It, along with Jasvina Shah. They wrote the book. So now Evan joins me here on the Circa Casino and Resort Hotline. Go out there when you're out in Vegas, because you're going to hang out at Circa, and Circa has got the biggest sports book in the world. And now Evan Moore joins me here on the Score. What's up, dude?
I'm chilling, man. How you been? Everything good?
Yeah, man. Everything is great. So I gave a little bit of a preamble. So can you explain to the Score listener on why it might be odd that you, of all people, became such a huge hockey fan?
Yeah, sure. I mean, growing up in South Shore, I mean, the hockey wasn't really a thing. And I think what really got me into it when I was about 10 years old, I was watching the 88 Calgary Olympics, and I saw, I believe it was the Soviet Union and Sweden, but I definitely remember it was the Soviet Union because favorite color was red, and I saw them play, and like I saw the ice, and I was like, this was really fun, but also kind of dangerous. So that's pretty much, you know, I was pretty much sold after that.
So how did that then manifest into your fandom growing? Like, what were the things that, because how long was it before you learned how to skate?
Man, I didn't start skating until maybe 3-4 years ago.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it was kind of like, remember in Cedric the Entertainer and Kings of Comedy when he was like on the edge trying to learn how to skate, and he was talking about, you know, I can't do this. So it was basically like that. It was basically me and some little kids, but before that, I had written an article for a now defunct local sports website called Chicago Side, and I talked about, you know, my fandom as a kid growing up and everything else, and how I kind of hid it from people, you know, because not too many of us, you know, out there. And sometimes you're doing something that's considered quote unquote a white sport, you know, you receive ridicule and scrutiny. But one of the people that read that article, because I mentioned, like, hey, I wanted to learn how to play at some point, and turns out this person was from the area. We met up, he gave me some hockey equipment, and it all went from there. You know, it kind of really, like, leaned into it in terms of learning how to skate first, then the equipment, and playing on a couple of teams, and kind of immersing myself in hockey culture.
And that's what the book is about. It's about hockey culture all the way up. So I want to know, like, what made you want to examine some of the things that are toxic about hockey culture?
man, this is a full circle moment because I feel like I'm one of the few people out there that watches the NBA and hockey at the same time. I mean, those sports happen at the same time. And I remember previous iteration of the Boris and Bernstein show, and you know, Bernstein saying, you know, he notices some of the stuff that hockey fans were saying about the NBA, and you know, it was pretty dog whistle stuff. And over time, I noticed that. But also, when you're in the freelance writing space, where I was for a long time, you have those stories that never get published, but you have all this information. But you also have information from people that reach out to you after you've already filed the story, and we were both able to pull it together, you know, relatively short period of time, could add all this info and also had, you know, all this first person experience for myself playing and, you know, going to games, and also, you know, my daughter starting to play and all that stuff too.
Yeah, and you're out there and your daughter seems to love the game, and it's fun to see her grow and learn and try to play it. But what are the things that you want to try and protect her from as she advances in hockey?
Man, it's a weird space because she's one of the few out there, but like when she's out there with her hair and her skin, and she's one of the few, you know, black or brown kids out there. And, you know, like in the book, I discuss how I was called a racial slur by a teammate in high school in another sport. And I remember, you know, I handled it at the time. I mean, all of a sudden this guy was upside down. I'm not going to say how he got that way, but you can figure it out. But, you know, but at the time I knew I had to handle it myself. I knew I couldn't rely on a coach or anyone else. I internalized that. And, you know, years later, you know, he turned six not too long ago, and we had that conversation with her about who she is, and before, you know, unfortunately someone else has it, tried to have it with her. And we told her, anyone ever says anything to you like that you don't like or make you feel uncomfortable, let the coach know, let me know, let your mother know. You got plenty of, you know, cousins on the south side, you got some cousins in Mexico too, so we'll find a way to, you know, get that person out of the way. But, you know, yeah, it's something I also think about, like, you know, it's like, is someone going to try to, you know, take that away from her? And, you know, how it's happened for so many people that we've seen and what we've written about. And it kind of goes into what Kyle Beetz was saying as I read the report and saw him on TSN. And then from every step away, someone tried to take that joy away from him. And it's happy to hear that he's even still playing to this day, because, you know, hockey culture is something else. And I can really briefly explain to your listeners how I see it. And this is a local station. It's like that favorite band that you like, they're playing at Subterranean or Empty Bottle or Community. And all of a sudden they're playing at House of Blues or the Ravinia and the United Center. And you feel negative and kind of uncomfortable about that. But at the same time, you want the coverage. But when certain people that weren't a fan of that band, when you were a fan of that band, start showing up, you know, it gets uncomfortable.
You're right. And we've talked about that a little bit on this show, where in 2009, there's a hardcore group of Blackhawks fans that are still going to games before things kind of flip around, and then they become the most popular thing. People are falling over themselves to try to get to the United Center to be a part of the winning. And that's where the Kyle Beetz story, it really, beyond what happened to the human being, what the trauma that was put upon Kyle Beetz, I think you're right. And I look at it as there was a lot of a co-opting of the journalism surrounding covering the Blackhawks. Your book came out before this story like really broke, and Kyle Beetz came out and said, yes, I am John Doe number one. When you heard his story, considering all of the work that you had done and talking to people around hockey, were there still elements of it to you that were surprising?
It wasn't surprising, honestly. I mean, it's kind of think about like what was going on at that time with the Blackhawks, with Kyle and with Akeem Olu being in the AHL with the IceHawks, and what Bill Peters said to him, you know, in front of players over what I was told, a little Wayne song. And you have that, you have what was going on with Patrick Kane back then, and you had all these issues. And one, I guess I wasn't really surprised to answer your question, Lawrence, but I think after I saw Kyle's interview and, you know, read the report, my first thought was, if they're, like, making provisions for a video coach, what are they doing for players that have gotten in trouble in the past? Like, if they're doing this for this guy who nobody knew about until you know, May when the WBZ report, if they're making this up for that guy, they gotta be doing something for players. Like it's kind of how I started to see things.
So how do we go about making some change so that, you know, the NHL is a real big fan of saying hockey is for everyone? How do we go about trying to make the game a safer place on every single level of it? And specifically, do you feel like the NHL has done enough, in whether it's punishment or programs going forward, to make sure that they're doing everything they can so that a Kyle Beach situation doesn't happen again?
Hockey for everyone is the NHL version of All Lives Matter. And it's nice to say, but it's at best a formative allyship. And you remember last summer when everything was going on with social unrest and still in the midst of COVID and all that. You had all these sports leagues putting out, you know, all these statements, like Major League Baseball, WNBA, the Premier League, and hockey comes up with Skate for Black Lives. Are we skating for Black Lives? Really? Like, and I think what really needs to happen is something that kind of happened similar to the NBA in the 80s, post, like, all those guys getting busted for drugs when the league started noticing where their fan base was, and they started to lean into that. And you see, not saying the NBA is perfect, but, you know, there's a bit of Black excellence there, you know, and other cultures and everything else. And as soon as the NHL kind of leads into that, and realize that, like, when they lean into it, it's not taken away from their core base of, you know, white sports fans. And once they realize that, and they realize that, you know, a lot of people who love hockey come from marginalized communities and non-traditional hockey areas. And when you take us on, you got to take on our thoughts and what makes us laugh, what makes us cry, what makes us think. And when they really, like, lean into that, like, really lean into it, not, like, you know, trotting out Willie O'Ree or saying hockey is for everyone and all that other stuff. Like, they need to really lean into it and understand, like, that this sport is changing before your eyes, and you either gonna, you know, get with it or run over. And that's why you see so many groups like Black Girl Hockey Club with Renee Hess, who wrote our forward. I mean, they wanted to do it their way, but there's a lot of folks who are connected with the sport that are sick of waiting around and to tell people what they already know. Like, it's like they've been through. I mean, their diversity effort started in 1995, and we've seen so much in hockey since then. And the fact that when that thing happened with Devontae Smith Pelly at the United Center, instead of saying, "Hey, stop being racist," hockey fans were saying, "Toughen up." And just remember that photo. Just look at that. The photos of the book, actually, one of the inserts is, you see Devontae in a penalty box. You see all these people pointing and laughing at him. You see kids holding up phones. And what did those kids take away from that night? I mean, this type of stuff is learned.
I think
I'm just saying this stuff is learned, and we just need to get in a place where we don't see racism as one-offs and not something that happens every now and then, like, I don't know, Halley's Comet or the Olympics or the lottery or something like that. They need to understand that it's systemic, and people carry all this stuff with them onto the ice and in the stands. And there wasn't a source of content for the book. We left stuff out, actually. We turned in our manuscript. Lasmina and I turned in our manuscript in January of this year. How much has happened in hockey since then?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, no, you're
almost
right.
I want.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that it leaves open the opportunity for you guys to continue to explore the progress that the NHL is making. And the point that you made about at the beginning where you're talking about like a popular band and them growing out of a garage and then playing some of the big venues, it seems like hockey wants it both ways, where they want to grow the game. Like, hockey fans that I talk to are desperate to be like, man, our game is awesome. You need to – and I love hockey. I love watching it. I think the skill and the athleticism – combination, the speed of it is amazing, but it seems like they only mm-hmm. want to go so far into inviting people into the tent, where there's a lot of purity tests that end up going on for people who actually do enjoy hockey that I find distasteful and quite honestly pushes me away from wanting to explore it further.
Yeah, definitely, because when people find out I read the book, I play hockey, this, that, and the third, like, you know, it's like the conversation usually goes to, I like hockey, but, you know, until we get rid of that, which you explained, that we're still going to see some of these issues. And, like, it's a thing where it's like people who will go to games or even play and feel like that they're being stared at, like, and just kind of they feel like it's like, oh, what are you doing here? And like that. And people kind of seem to forget, like, Black people invented a lot of hockey as we see it up in the Color Hockey League in Nova Scotia. And, like, the things we see in the sport is, like, you know, in terms of the slap shot and the butterfly style of goaltending, that was early onset Black excellence. Until they figured that out, that, hey, like, what you see in this sport, you know, came from a lot of melanated folks. That's how it's gonna be, and they need to understand. Like, look, like this is for everyone, but you know they approach it as all lives matter, or it's like it's some secret rewards club, you know, card or club or something like that. So until these folks get out of, you know, get their head out their butts, we'll continue to see this.
The secret rewards club line is a good one. You should keep that. The name of the book is Game Misconduct: Hockey's Toxic Culture and How to Fix It. Wherever you get books, you can get it. Evan F. Moore is the author, or one of the authors, with Jasvina Shah. Where can people get the book if they're looking for it?
I mean, Amazon is out there, but from, I guess also if you are into indie book spaces, you could look online at indiebooks.com. But locally, places like Bookie, the Both Versions, Bookseller, Semicolon has it, all these different bookstores around the city and the suburbs definitely has the book. So support the book if you feel like if you want to, and like you don't necessarily have to be a hockey fan to get down with the book. But also because of that, we have even Strength Gold Beer, which was made by, you know, Jay Westbrook, and you'll see that at Haymarket Brewery, and those proceeds go to organizations like Black Girl Hockey Club, Hockey on Your Block, and others.
Evan, thanks for the time, man. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
That is Evan F. Moore. The name of the book is Game Misconduct: Hockey's Toxic Culture and How to Fix It. You should check it out. You should go get it. And you should support your local bookstore, too. Like, you go to your local bookstore, ask them if they got it. If they don't, say, hey, can you order it? That's a win-win for everybody, right? You get to support a local business. They get to support a local author. And win, 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 win. When we come back, there's some White Sox stuff that I want to discuss. We will hear some words from the White Sox general manager. I want to bounce some ideas off of Herbie. We will do all of that next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
I'm glad that so many of you enjoy the conversation with Evan Moore. You can follow him on Twitter at Evan F. Moore. It's him and his daughter, when it comes to hockey, man, they are hysterical. And seeing a small person in hockey gear is hilarious to me. But his daughter is out there doing it, and he is out there helping her navigate hockey. And the name of the book, again, is Game Misconduct, Hockey's Toxic Culture and How to Fix It. So the GM meetings are going on in California. I think they're in Carlsbad right now for the GM meetings for baseball. That's where they're at?
Yep.
Oh, good. I've been paying attention when I've been reading. So Rick Hahn is out there talking about a bunch of different stuff as it pertains to the White Sox. Like, for example, Carlos Rodon and them not giving the qualifying offer. And I mean, I can't front on Rick's logic. Like, we all saw Carlos Rodon and we all saw what happened at the beginning. And we don't even know. You know me. I've been asking, what's wrong? What's actually wrong with Carlos Rodon? Don't give me this arm fatigue nonsense. Because no amount of rest in the season allowed him to have back-to-back starts where you felt confident that he was going to get people out. So maybe we'll find out as the winter goes on what's actually going on with Hard Carl. But I understood completely Rick being like, yeah, so $18.4 million guaranteed for 1 year. We were not ready to do that. Makes sense to me. Same thing with last year. And maybe you end up being able to, if you want to, re-sign him for much less than that. Personally, I'm good. Thanks to Carlos for his hard work. The no-hitter was awesome. I hope that he gets his money, but I hope that he doesn't get his money with the White Sox. The other thing that he's been talking about while being asked by the reporters about the team and how it's built is the situation with Craig Kimbrell and Liam Hendricks. And this to me is really interesting. They did pick up the option on Craig Kimbrell. It was a $16 million option on Craig Kimbrell. Conventional wisdom would tell you that the reason the White Sox picked it up is so that they could then trade Craig Kimbrell. But maybe not. This was Rick Hahn at the GM meetings talking about Kimbrell and Hendricks.
Obviously, he's got an extremely long track record of success in the closer role. So it's understandable there'd be more comfort for him there. And if you're projecting him out for 22, it's probably easier to project him in that role where he's had the success than how he was used down the stretch by us. But in terms of his approach to it, he's repeatedly emphasized winning's the most important thing.
Okay, well, winning's the most important thing for Craig Kimbrell. And when they made the move, I looked at it as a real positive, like to have two guys that if you end up in a situation where because you extended Hendricks in a game that you might need Kimbrell to close a game, that makes a lot of sense. Or because you end up having two guys that are good at closing, and Liam Hendricks was one of the best, if not the best, at it last year, you have two guys that could maybe flip-flop roles here or there. And Craig Kimbrell did not take to being the eighth inning guy. I don't think it's as simple as he's uncomfortable pitching in the eighth inning, therefore you should have him pitch in the ninth, and you should just say to Liam Hendricks, who was effective, more than effective, was great in the ninth, now you're going to go back to pitching eighth in the eighth inning. You're going to be the setup guy for Craig Kimbrell. I also don't think that it makes sense for the White Sox to have that much money invested in between the two guys. That would be, what, $34 million in the eighth and ninth inning for the White Sox? That's a lot of cash, especially when one of them isn't doing what you're asking him to do. But is it just, oh, man, if you get him in the ninth inning, then he's going to be fine, and then Liam's going to be totally fine with being changing his role back to being an eighth inning guy or a longer reliever or the guy that's going to be put in situations where you just need to put the fire out. I also wonder, with a new pitching coach, and this is not to take any shots at Ethan Katz. I feel like Ethan Katz did an amazing job as the White Sox pitching coach this year. You have Lance Lynn as a finalist for Cy Young. By the way, has any award ever felt more hollow than Dallas Keuchel's Gold Glove? It's like Dallas Keuchel got a Gold Glove, and White Sox fans are like, take your Gold Glove and get out of here with your Gold Glove. But I thought the Ethan Katz did a really wonderful job. I do wonder if the pitching infrastructure overall, when you're making as much of an overhaul as the White Sox are, from what Don Cooper wanted to do organizationally to what Ethan Katz may want to do organizationally, do you have everything that you need to get the most out of a player like Craig Kimbrell? I bring this up because it took the Cubs a while to figure out how to get the most. Cubs fans were so frustrated with Kimbrell. They wanted to launch him into the moon if they could. I was lucky enough to have David Ross on the show a couple times a month throughout the baseball season. And I asked him about Kimbrell and the things that they did to get the most out of him. And Rossi, like, reflected. He deflected praise for it, which I thought was interesting. But take a listen to what he said about how they were able to really help Kimbrell reach his potential as a Cub.
I don't really put my stock in that. I would really defer to the player and my staff. I think that Craig handled some adversity really well through some early times here and was willing to put in the work. When the player's willing to put in the work to get better, when we identify what the problem may be and go out and have a good attitude and continue to be the caliber of person as they work through some of their struggles, especially from a guy with his resume, that's where I just am super proud and thankful for the type of human being that Craig was through his struggles, because the success, we know the stuff was in there. And once he figured that out, he's had so much success. It's easy for him to, get back to having that confidence and dominating baseball games. I'm super happy for him. I'm happy that, he is also going to be able to go in and doesn't have to pick up his family and move towns, and he gets to stay in the city and play for a really good team that's got a chance to do special things. So I'm definitely happy for Craig, but I try, you know, like
I know you don't want the credit. I'm just saying that, like, you know, you and everyone involved, including Craig, like, you guys worked him hard, and he took to the coaching, and look at what you got. You got a guy that when his curveball is on, he is unhittable.
Yeah, I'm so happy for him. And look, like, the fact that we went on the run in May that we went on was a big part of him at the back end of that bullpen, and Chafin and Tapera stepping up. So, like, yeah, I mean, I'm super, super proud of that. I'm so proud of, like, my staff really stands out in your question too, of those guys communicating, continue to work and staying positive with a guy with a really good resume that was going through some struggles. And when he locked it in, boy, was he fun to watch. And it's fun to call his number when he was down there in the bullpen.
So that was Rossi talking about Craig Kimbrell. To me, it's, you got to trade him. I don't see any reason to, in a window where you think that you're going to win, to experiment with, well, let's move Liam back and let's just give Craig the closer job. It would be different for me if you didn't see Hendricks dominate at the closer role last year. They made a big expenditure to bring him in here. Big cash to have this guy come in and be a closer, but I guess they would argue he could also be a high leverage reliever. Like, you could put it in those terms because Liam Hendricks is capable of pitching multiple innings. And this guy had 38 saves last year. An ERA in the mid twos, a whip of 0.73. He was getting people out. If he struggled, I would say, and I bet he gets votes for Cy Young this year, by the way, I would say, all right, maybe you should experiment with it. But I'm not there. I'm not there with that. I hope that they can find a trade partner for Craig Kimbrell. And if the thing that he thinks is holding him back is not being the ninth inning guy, that he can go to a place where he can pitch the ninth inning. But I don't want to discount the fact that maybe with Ross having a guy who can actually go and catch, and I believe did go and catch Kimbrell when the Cubs were looking at him, that perhaps we shouldn't just dismiss that maybe they were doing something organizationally with Kimbrell that the White Sox haven't figured out yet. But I don't know if there's time for the White Sox to try and duplicate that when their goals are so lofty. Herbie, I know that you and Tanny on the Locked On Sox podcast have touched on this subject. Where do you come down on what to do with Craig Kimbrell and Liam Hendricks?
I mean, there had to be a discussion before the trade went down. I believe that Rick Hahn wouldn't have acquired Craig Kimbrell without, hey, this is a guy that's gone through some struggles, now is on the right track. He's on the right track because they're using him in the correct role. So I won't acquire this dude unless you're going to use him correctly. And I don't know if Tony or Ethan or whoever, they didn't use him in the way that he was supposed to be used this year. No excuse for Craig on that one. He's supposed to get outs no matter where the innings are. So I would have him on some other team where you can acquire a spot that you need. Maybe a prospect that's coming up in the ranks. Maybe a starter. Just a team that needs a lockdown closer that can unlock Craig Kimbrell. Maybe the Cubs want him back. Hell, trade him back. I don't want Nick Madrigal back. You can keep him. Keep him on the north side. But I don't think Craig Kimbrell, Liam Hendricks, not because of the people and they don't like each other, I don't think they can coexist on the same staff unless you use them correctly. And Tony doesn't seem to want to use them correctly, even though he's complaining at the end of the year that he's a ninth inning guy.
Yeah, that bothered me. That really bothered me. And you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Rick right now, but it bothered me that it felt like Tony was bus-tossing him. Like, I find it hard to believe that before they made a move for Kimbrell, like, I can't imagine Rick just being like, I'm going to do this and not tell the manager. When you consider the amount of power that La Russa clearly has in that organization, I can't imagine Rick not being like, this is what I'm thinking about doing. If I do this, can you make it work?
And also consulting Liam Hendricks about it, too.
Of course. And all of us, can you imagine Tony saying, no, I can't make it work?
Not at all.
I can't. So then once you get to that place, and then when it doesn't work out, you have the choice. I also don't think that Rick had a gun to Tony's head, like, you're going to make Hendricks the closer, and that's it, and Kimbrell's the eighth inning guy. I imagine he said, I'm going to get this player. We agree we should get this player, right? Cool. I trust you to figure it out and work it with both players. So I don't want to hear Tony La Russa at the end complaining, well, you know, he's a ninth inning guy, and you know that's why he's bad. No, man, you're supposed to be the guy that fixes that stuff. This is seemingly the reason why you're the manager of the White Sox right now. Because you're supposed to be able to overcome some of that stuff. And he didn't. And it felt like excuse making when Kimbrel struggle in other roles in the playoffs, and then Tony's like, well, you know, he's a ninth inning guy. Then why did you pitch him? If you couldn't trust him, why did you pitch him? Okay. All right, I'm going to try not to be mad about this. I'm going to take a timeout. When I come back, something really cool is happening in DeKalb. I'll share next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
So ESPN has this promo that they do for college football, and they're talking about, like, the fans, and it's really cool, like, all the excitement, the wins and losses. And one of the images is Thomas Hammock, the head coach at Northern Illinois, screaming as he's walking off the sidelines in joy. Well, Thomas Hammock got an extension through the 2026-27 season with the Huskies. And the reason that he did is because the Huskies were picked last in the MAC this year. They were last because they were awful last year. They were 0-6. It was like, oh, this seems like a questionable hire. And yet now they are in first place in the MAC West. They have a clear path to getting to the MAC championship game and maybe, maybe winning the conference. Rocky Lombardi is out here slinging it for them. They have gotten really, really good. And here's a guy that played for Northern Illinois, like, back home, and I'm sure Sean Frazier was like, yeah, we're not letting you go. Here's an extension. And maybe he's happy in DeKalb, which would be even better. It's nice to see someone come home and him looking forward to this job and getting it and succeeding at it. Oh, by the way, tonight is a game for first place. Some action, midweek action is going on tonight. Northern Illinois is taking on Ball State in what I'm calling the David Haw Bowl. Because if you didn't know, David Haw actually played for Ball State. But I'll be rooting against him tonight because I want this story to end with Northern Illinois winning the MAC. And it just, we need a good feel good. And why not have it be Thomas Hammock and the Huskies? Go Huskies! I'll talk with Parkins and Spiegel next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.